You're listening to Hearing Our Heritage, the podcast where we preserve the voices and stories of the older generation and make them accessible to younger ears. We pay tribute to those who have paved the way and learn from their lived experiences. I'm your host, Katie Pierce.
William Doyle Cranney, February 7, 1944, in Washington, D.C.
Bill Cranney has spent his life providing for his family, enjoying sports and the outdoors, and diligently serving the Lord. From his stories, it's clear that he's tried all his life to do the right thing and to do what he's been asked to do, which actually has been quite a bit. Him and his wife, Anne, raised four strong, successful, athletic kids. Bill started and owned his own automotive parts business, and together the Crannies served five missions, and Bill served in five bishoprics. His story, though, starts with his parents. So, Bill, tell me a little bit about your mom and dad.
My dad went on a mission to Germany. My mother's father had passed away when she was five. So her mother, about 10 years later, married a Cranny. They met at a family reunion up in Bear Lake.
So they were in Utah, but what were they doing in Washington, D.C. when you were born?
My dad was in medical school. In fact, my parents were married in Washington, D.C. on December 31st, 1941. And remember, 1941, December 7th, was the bombing of Pearl Harbor. So that encouraged my mom, who had been dating, to leave Gunnison and go to Washington, D.C. and get married. It just hurried things along. World War II was starting. And they were married by Ezra Taft Benson, who was the state president at the time.
And where did they go after they left D.C.?
We went to Portland, Oregon, where my brother was born. Then we went to Logan, because it's the end of World War II. So we went to Logan, and my dad was in the Philippines. While he was there, his parents were hit and killed in Salt Lake City, drunk driver. So he got out of the Navy, came home, had the funeral. My dad started practicing in Ephraim, Utah when he got out of the service. Then when the Korean War came up, he was drafted because he hadn't finished his term. So we went to San Diego for a couple of years. In San Diego, they have what they call canyons down there. They're big washes. And when we had time, we would go all over these washes and stuff. And they had rattlesnakes. They had all kinds of stuff there. They had drains that go from the street down underground and come out in the bottom of those canyons, just these big pipes. But they were big enough that we could, as kids, could walk into. So we'd take a flashlight and some sticks and go up those things and get the cobwebs off. And we did a lot of things my folks didn't know about. We lived in two places in San Diego. One was on Crown Point, where SeaWorld is now. And then we moved out by Miramar Naval Air Station, which was the biggest naval air station in the world. So we saw a lot of jets. I had a lot of interest in that. So I actually wrote several of the airplane companies and asked them to send pictures. And they did. They sent me all these pictures, and I had them all over my rooms. And in fact, eventually, in my early 40s, I got a pilot's license and got involved with another friend, and we owned an airplane for a while. But I've always enjoyed those kind of things.
Eventually, Bill's family moved to Orem, Utah, where Bill and his siblings enjoyed swimming in the pool and playing sports. Athletics became a major theme in Bill's life, and that included his high school track career.
I high jumped. Back the year I was a senior, Orem High took state in track, because we had our fastest runner was the He was very fast. I was just on the relay team and high jump. I took fourth in state in high jump my junior year, and I took fourth in state in long jump my senior year. So.
But I imagine sports weren't your only interest in high school. Tell me a little bit about your dating life, and specifically how you met your wife, Anne.
Let's see, my junior year, I dated 20-something girls. When I was a sophomore, I dated one girl and another girl regularly, and I got tired of that, so I started dating a lot of girls, so which was a good move. And then when I got to BYU, I'd always admired my wife. Was she could outrun and outjump every girl at Orem High, so I had admired her from a distance, but we didn't date in high school at all. when we were freshmen at BYU, I had determined that I wanted to ask her out. So I did. But I had determined I was not going to kiss her on the first date. She'll get after me for talking about this, but I hadn't kissed a girl when I was a junior in high school until all my friends bet this girl I was dating $5 that she did it. She earned her $5. And they said, did you kiss her back? I said, kiss her back. And I never kissed a girl. It just made me shake all over. Just next summer, I had determined that I wanted to date this Ann Callis. So we had a nice time, went to a dance. She was on the porch. I was down off the porch. And she came off the porch to just talk. We were just talking. And I got up real close to her. I said, do you paint your eyebrows? And mind you, we're face to face now. She kissed me anyway. She doesn't like me telling that story. And after that, when we dated, it was kiss, 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 kiss.
You fell in love.
Yeah, we did.
What about her did you fall in love with?
She was a good person, and she loved me, and I loved her. That was the important thing.
Mm-hmm. And how did you ask her to marry you?
About February, I was thinking of a mission. But boy, I was just madly in love, and I finally said, I think we ought to just get married. So I called my folks from her place and said, we're engaged. And my mom was not happy. My dad only asked me one question. He says, do you love her? And I says, I do very much. That's all he asked me. So we got married in Salt Lake Temple on May 31st, 1963, the end of our freshman years. Then I had worked at Flaming Gorge Dam, and so the two of us went out to Flaming Gorge Dam the next summer in a little trailer. It's a construction town, so there was not anything for her to do. I quit halfway through that summer because she was just... She'd sleep in all day and had nothing to do, no job, no nothing. And she had a job waiting for her back at Albertsons. When I married her, she's working at Albertsons. And one of my friends had gone on a mission, and he was just quitting the night watering at Riverside Country Club. So I got his job. She went back to Albertsons. So we were both working, getting ready for that fall where we would be married and going to school, and we needed the money.
And do you have any happy memories from that summer in the trailer?
Her folks brought her two little brothers out to visit with us, stayed with us. We had this trailer all to ourselves. So I played a lot of games growing up. So we were playing a game out there with her brothers, and they liked to play games too. So we had decided that we were going to go over. They had a ballpark over there, and they had a pickup game every night. So we'd all said, we're going to go over there and see if I could go over and play baseball. But before I had to finish this game. So Ann took her parents over there, and we finished the game. Then I went over there, and I saw them sitting there, and I said, so where's Ann? They said, she's out there on first base. And she was playing with all the guys. She was a really good athlete, mm-hmm. and she's, you know. So that's the story.
That's pretty cool.
It was.
That's sweet. Yeah, it sounds like you were both very athletic, very sporty.
We were. We did a lot of things. When we went to BYU, and I tried out for the track team, and Coach Robinson, who was the track coach at BYU, let me dress. He gave me a locker and some clothes. He put me in what they called a triple jump or a hop, step, and jump, which I was doing fairly well in there. And then I was wrestling upstairs with a guy that was 20 pounds bigger than me, and he hyperextended my left knee. That finished my college. So,
So that ended your college career. Were you able to keep playing sports in a less competitive way? And did Ann play with you?
She played volleyball and basketball. I took volleyball in college. And so they had a tournament, all the sections of volleyball with the men. And we took it all. And I could jump within a centimeter of the tallest. I could really jump. I was a high jumper. So I really enjoyed that. My wife, one year, was the ward sports director for the whole married ward. She got all the women there, and these were married women, to enter things. And at the end of the year, they had an award ceremony, and our ward took it for the whole BYU. And they kept saying, and this is a married ward, you know. Anyway, she took the badminton for the whole school. She could beat all the girls. Nice. And she was 2 months pregnant, I think.
So she would have been pregnant with Kim, your first. And then the next three came along, Dale, Connie, and Dean. How close in age were they?
We had children every 2 years, so 64, 66, 68, and 70. That was our four children, and we were 26, had our last, so we had a young family. Back when we graduated from BYU, we had three kids.
And what did you enjoy doing with your kids when they were young?
Oh, we went to Lake Powell a lot, raised them down there. We went camping to Flaming Gorge, always in tents when we were first married. Later on, when I was in business for myself, we bought a boat, and we bought a bigger boat. And we just bought of outdoors. The kids remember that.
And were your kids busy in sports?
Yes.
Were you running them to games? And
always.
Yeah.
Kim, when she was like 4 years old, we were married student housing, and it was always quads, four buildings. And there was one sidewalk on one end, one on the other. And I remember looking at her one day, and she was down there, and she had it all organized to race from one sidewalk to the other. And she was like 3 years old or four. Ready, set, go. And pew, she'd be over to the other sidewalk waiting for them all to get there. She was really fast. She had a full ride scholarship herself at Southern Utah. Dale was voted the outstanding athlete at Mountain View High School. Back 1 week when they played football, they played against American Fork and Provo and all that. He was voted the outstanding player of that week in all of the region. So Dean could outrun almost anybody. And then he tore up his one knee just going down the field, and somebody bumped him, not in the knee, but because he had his foot planted and tore up his knees. And Connie was, she was recruited at UVU, but she didn't want to stay here, so she went to Rexburg to play volleyball. Huh. And she was outstanding as a point guard in basketball and all of them. Yeah.
And as Bill said before, three of those four athletic kids were born while Bill and Ann were still at BYU. Bill was working hard to become an engineer. He said that his childhood love and interest in planes may have had something to do with it, but it was also his determination and natural ability to understand how things work.
Halfway through college, I took a dynamics class in civil engineering. And for some reason, the year before in statistics, I didn't do well at all. In civil engineering, it was statistics, and I didn't like it, didn't do well at it. And the next year, I took this dynamics class, and I did really well in that class. And there was lots of classes of engineers that were taking dynamics, including mechanical, civil, electrical, and chemical. And I basically outgunned them all. Seriously, on the finals, I had the best scores. So it just came to me. It was something that was within me. It was a mechanical intuitiveness, I call that. And I worked at a gas station all the way through college. So I became associated with mechanics and went to work for IBM the summer before I graduated as a draftsman. And the next year, I found if I could, because it was a 5-year course in those days for engineering, that if I stayed one more year, I could get a master's degree. So I did. And then I ended up going to work at UNIVAC in Salt Lake City out by the airport. But that was the end of Vietnam, and engineers went from 500 to 250 in the next year or two when I lost the job at UNIVAC. And so I was wagon peddling. That's where you go around in a van and call on gas stations. And within 2 months, I was making more money doing that than I was as an engineer at UNIVAC. So wagon peddler means you're in a wagon and you're peddling auto parts. And I had built shelves on there and I would go around. In fact, I started calling on Salt Lake Community College in the automotive program. And I'd go there with my van, sell to the students. I did that for a year or two and was quite successful. So that's how I started out. I had a pretty good attitude anyway, that I could do most anything I put my mind to. There's some things I didn't do well at, but I didn't care. I could do what I put my mind to, what I wanted to do, where I saw a reason to do it well. So.
To recap, after graduation, the family had moved up to the West Valley Granger area, and Bill worked for UNIVAC until he lost the job and started selling auto parts. Eventually, he was able to start his own auto parts company using his home basement as a warehouse, and it was called Bill's Auto Parts, and it's still going today. A big part of what made him successful, though, was he became a seller of DuPont auto paint.
I found out the people that were buying paint were having to wait for their paint and stuff out of downtown Salt Lake, and here I was out in West Valley City by Winder Dairy, just right next to him. So I talked to DuPont, and they came out and talked to me, and he said, "Where are you going to put this?" And I said, "Put what?" I knew nothing about automotive paint, except I had painted one car. And he contacted me 3 months later. Meanwhile, I had moved into an old laundromat in Kearns. And he contacted me and says, "Are you still interested?" I said, "Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm in a much bigger building now." So I took on the DuPont paint line and did really well with it because I was the first in that area that was close to the body shops. Then we ended up moving back to Orem, her folks' place. They gave us a quarter of an acre. We built a house on it, and I bought some ground down there in Orem and started selling auto body with DuPont. Been a blessing.
Further down the road, the family moved to Orem, where Ann's parents had left them some land to build a home. Bill also set up a storefront.
In Utah County, it was a whole different market than Salt Lake. Had a lot of service. And so when we moved to Orem, our key was to give good service. In fact, most people I sold to thought I was the DuPont rep because I knew a lot about the paint line and how to make it work. In fact, it's all we sold was paint. I got out of the parts business completely. So that I became what they call a PBE jobber, paint and body equipment, which was very lucrative because I got in first.
And eventually your kids came to work for you, right? It became a family business?
Well, my son Dale came in business with me. And then my two daughters, Kim and Connie, their husbands came in business. So there was four of us there, all family owned.
With Bill's auto parts in the trusty hands of his family, Bill and Ann were able to put in papers to serve a mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And they didn't just serve one, they served five missions to Nigeria, Ghana, San Francisco, West Virginia, and Greece.
When we were first married, we said, when we can, we will go on a mission as a couple missionaries. So when we were 53 in Orem, put in our papers and got a call to Nigeria, which was, you know, we grew up in Utah Valley, and it was a shock. But I looked at it as an adventure. We stayed in Nigeria for a year and a half, had some great experience with some great people. They're very spiritual people in West Africa.
And what was your assignment in Nigeria?
We were there to do leadership training, and it was growing so fast in West Africa that a lot of our members and the leaders had just joined the church not too long ago, and they needed, you know. Well, I'll give you one example. There with the district presidency, and there was all these manuals in their office. And she saw all these manuals in their closet and said, "What are these doing here?" And they says, "Well, if we give them out, they don't bring them back." She says, "Get them out." So she did a good job there. So we had a lot of good experience. And then we prayed about it, about what we could do. The couple before us were actually going out and teaching. Well, it appeared to us that that wasn't our calling. We were there to do leadership training anyway. But what we ended up doing, and we prayed about it, is going and teaching new members. They called it the new member discussions in those days. I don't know if they still do it that way, but they were really needed. And it was enjoyable. We had a lot of people to teach and to help with. And Nigeria was not that safe a place, so we always had to stay together.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So you were true companions. And after you finished that first mission to Nigeria, you went next to Ghana. Tell me about that.
There I was asked to be a counselor in the district presidency. So every Sunday we would go to, there's five branches, and we'd go to a different branch. And every time we'd go, at the end of the meeting, they would ask me to give the closing talk, which I eventually didn't ever prepare for. I just let the Spirit tell me what to say. Oh, that was a good experience too. And we just moved in a month later. We're in our house, and right next to it is this little school that probably had 60 or 70 children. And we were just there one day, and they were singing a song. We started listening to it. And it was, I am a child of God. So we went over there and he says, yeah, we were wondering when you were going to come over. We hadn't for a month. We were just getting used to where we were. So we started going over there every week and they invited us to teach and I would teach it. I'd give them some Book of Mormon stories. So that was a good experience. In fact, we had two young ladies stop by on Sunday and stopped church, and they were from, found out after we visited with them, from Orem, Utah. That's where we're from, you know, and she'd come over for dinner, and they did. And they're there. And the more I talked to this one in particular, I says, she described where they lived. And I says, so did you live at 624 South on 4th East in Orem? She says, yeah, that was our house. I says, no, that was our house when I was growing up. I mean, here we are in Ghana. It's a small world anyway.
And that brings us to your third mission. Where did you go for that?
They sent us this time to San Francisco. My wife was the mission secretary and I was the automotive, the car czar.
That's no small job. Can you tell me a bit about what it was like?
They knew how much you were spending on each car each month. And there was an average in the church in those days of about $35 a month per car. The guy that I replaced, that's about what he was doing. The guy before him was doing like $48 per month per car. And I was very familiar with automotive. So when I left, I had it down to $23 per car per month. So I think I did a good job. That was fun for me. And of course, we had a lot of accidents and a lot of take care of this, take care of that.
And once you were done in San Francisco, where were you off to next?
Put our papers in again, told them we'd go for a year. And they called us back, says, would you go a year and a half? And we thought, well, that means they're sending us foreign again. Well, they sent us to West Virginia Mission, almost in North Carolina. We were as far away from the mission home as you could get. And after a couple of months, they made me branch president there. That was a challenge because everybody was related to everybody. It took us a while to figure out, you know, it's kind of the Hatfields and the McCoys a little. We've joked about that, but we had one that a young man had killed himself. And so I had to preside at a suicide, which was actually interesting. His father was in prison for first-degree murder, and they allowed him to come out. His mother had abandoned him, but the father was there on the front row of our chapel with the guard at both doors in shackles. Anyway, that was an experience. But they were listening. Even the guards, I was watching. It's actually a spiritual experience for me personally. I had read an article in the Ensign that talked about death and all that. And then one piece said, what about suicide? And it was about half a page is all. And this was just months before this kid committed suicide. And says, you do it like any other one. You talk about their goodness, their virtues, all the good things you can think about. So that's what we did. I think we had one baptism while I was there, and that was hard. She married a jerk who was not a member. Anyway, it was quite a challenge. When they first asked me to be the branch president there, I said to the stake president who called me, I says, I'm not supposed to have to be branch president. You know, I'm a missionary that, you know, and there had been five branch presidents that still all lived there. He says, well, the Lord wants you. Said, okay. Anyway, a few months later, I was talking with the first counselor in the stake presidency. And I said to him, how am I doing? He says, well, you've done a miracle. And I said, how's that? Well, a few years earlier, they had sustained a new branch president. Something came up where one of the members had two people who voted not to sustain them. And these guys were two of the people I asked to be in the branch presidency. And I didn't know that. And one turned them down. And then they went back to me later and says, well, who are you going to ask for your other counselor? And I says, no, he's the one. So they went back and talked to him again, and he accepted. And we became good friends. And so that was what he meant by you've done a miracle. So that was a good experience there. Then we'd gone to four missions. My wife's half Greek. So I said to her and to the bishop, I says, I'd like to go to Greece. And my wife says, no, don't put down on any papers that we want to go to Greece. And so the bishop says, okay, I won't. And we get a call to Greece. And he caught me in the hallway. He says, honest, I didn't say anything. So the Lord must have been hearing us. So And we ended up not in Greece, but in Cyprus. And after we'd been there for a month or month and a half, they made me branch president there. And it was just a little branch. And we only had one baptism there.
So you were in a lot of branch presidencies throughout your missions. And you also served in bishoprics back in Utah.
Well, I did serve in the bishopric here. I've been in about five bishoprics, including one at BYU, which was enjoyable. Linden Care and Training Center. I was the branch president down there. I was in the bishopric at our home ward in Orem, and then one here, you know, in the bishop's counselor.
You spent so much time serving in the church. I'm curious, when did you gain your testimony of the gospel? Was it when you were younger?
Yeah. Although when I got married, my wife had us pray every night, which we did. And she was good for me because I wasn't paying tithing on always. And I wasn't having prayers always. When we got married, we did those things. We've always paid our tithing, and we've been blessed for it. A very strong testimony of tithing. You know, we used to have a budget, and they asked people in the ward to pay a budget, which they've since dissolved because they pay enough tithing and all that. So, and one year, they asked us all to do that, and I was selling at Salt Lake Community College and doing quite a business down there. And the bishopric asked us all to donate what we could because we needed the money for our budget. So we took $600-something, which we saved, and gave it to the budget. And literally within days, I had two people who had owed me money at Salt Lake Community College came to my store and paid off what they owed me. And I didn't know where they were, and it hit almost to the penny how much we had given that year. So, and I've never worried about, you know, we've had tough times financially. We've always been blessed in lots of ways.
And with the blessing of being financially stable and having a thriving business, Bill was able to tap into his love of airplanes and bought a plane with a friend of his.
Well, I was in my low 40s. I had this business down here, and we were fairly successful, and I'd always had an interest. And so one day I went down to Provo Airport, and I says, well, let's get a pilot's license. And it was about $1,800, and I had two instructors, and we flew until I got it. And then one of my customers, Norm Bangerter, all used to be a governor of Utah, his nephew lived, married a girl across the street from me, and he was running a body shop. So we became really good friends, and he came to me one day, he says, hey, I found this airplane. It was a four-seater Grumman Tiger. It's for sale. You want to go in on it with me? I ended up going on it with him. So we bought this plane. It was a red, white, and blue, but mostly white. The red and the blue had faded a bit, so we sanded it down, and we painted it out on the tarmac at Provo Airport. I never did get very many hours in it, and we eventually sold it. Furthest we flew was over to Pueblo, Colorado. Flew to St. George, where my folks lived. Flew to Rexburg, where two of our kids went to school up there. And I'd tell my customers, hey, if you need something, this was in Vernal or someplace like that, just call me up. Give me a reason to fly.
Yeah.
And I'd take this $12 piece of whatever, go down to the Provo Airport and fly it out to Vernal, and they'd come pick it up. And yeah, even in Bicknell, Utah, I flew down there some stuff. I flew some paint to somebody over in Rock Springs that he'd opened up this thing of supposed to be paint, and it was all primer, so he was without the paint and he needed it right now. Mm-hmm. So I called the people about shipping, and they wouldn't take flammables, so I called him back. And this is before I had this airplane, so I rented an airplane, a Piper airplane, and flew from Provo to Rock Springs through the Uintas. He picked it up. Just any reason to fly. I flew to Blanding once just to collect from a guy that hadn't paid me, and he was really nice about it. But I flew in there, and I says to the guy at the airport, it's just a little airport, I says, so I just need to get downtown. He says, well, take that old station wagon there and put $5 in it.
Great.
Those were the days. Yeah. So I did.
Bill has definitely led an interesting life. But through it all, the sports, Bill's auto parts, five church missions, and flying planes, the most important thing to Bill is his family.
We've got 15 grandchildren, the youngest of which is a sophomore at BYU Idaho. And We've got 23 great grandkids, and this summer we've got 3 more on the way. We love them dearly. We took all our adult kids to Alaska a year ago, and this summer we're going to, just Ann and I are going to go to Greenland and Iceland. This is our 60th wedding anniversary. It's coming up May 31st. So.
Wow. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Do you have a secret for 60 years?
You know, people have asked me that question, and I don't have a secret. I think if you love the person you're married to and can show that, that solves a lot of problems. When we were in Nigeria, President Hinckley came. He talked to the brethren, and this is a different culture now. He says, now, brethren, I want you to go home and tell your wife that you love her. Well, 2 weeks later, back in the district we were part of, this district president said, so President Hinckley asked us to do that, so I went home and told my wife, and they had 3 or 4 kids, that I loved her for the first time ever. For the first time ever. And that was a blessing to him and to the people. A very strong testimony of attending church, doing what you're asked to do, tithing, loving others. And that's what life's all about.
Throughout his life, Bill has served freely, cared for others, and done what he's been asked to do. He's a fantastic example of hard work and dedication. Thank you to Bill Cranny for allowing me to interview him, and to Kim Hull for purchasing this episode. If there is someone you would like to have featured on Hearing Our Heritage, email hearingourheritage@gmail.com.